A prominent local school scraps its diversity curriculum as parents and students speak out. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. It's the first day of February. Thanks for listening today. Just ahead, we kick off Black History Month with a look at how the movement for racial justice is affecting the Bowles School. What are your thoughts and comments about this? Get on the line now. It's 549-2937. Then later, grocery giant Publix under fire. We'll explain, but first, this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. Sunday, the state reported an increase of 7,788 new positive tests. The cumulative number of cases of COVID now in Florida stands at above 1.7 million, with nearly 27,000 deaths recorded. Okay, today kicks off Black History Month, as I mentioned, and it's in that context that we begin the hour with a look at how the movement for racial justice is affecting one local school. Just a few months after responding to public accusations about systemic racism on campus, the Bowles School is discontinuing part of its racial literacy curriculum. Now, some parents are asking why. We're going to begin the hour examining this as we welcome Emily Block of the Florida Times Union, who covered the story. Hi, Emily.
Good morning, Melissa.
Always good to have you on the show. Also joining us, Dr. Tammy Hodo, CEO of All Things Diverse. Dr. Hodo, thank you for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And here's our question to callers. What are your questions about what's happening on the Bowles School campus? We want to hear from everyone, but if you're a student or parent at Bowles, we especially want to hear from you. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. In a moment, we'll get the bigger picture from Dr. Hodo about why these curriculums are becoming mainstream and why schools are adopting them. But first, Emily Block, bring us up to date on what's happening at the Bowles School. Last week, the school's board of trustees chair and the head of school sent a letter out to families explaining their decision not to use a curriculum called Pollyanna. Tell us what you know.
Sure. So on Tuesday of last week, like you said, Melissa, a letter went out to parents and families in the Bowles community announcing that this curriculum, the Pollyanna curriculum, which is for elementary and middle school students, was not going to be part of their diversity push anymore. They weren't going to use, the school wasn't going to use all of the curriculum, it says. It was going to use bits and pieces of that, as well as bits and pieces of other diversity curriculums that their diversity committee saw fit. But after what they're calling angst from their community, they're no longer going to be using pieces of the Pollyanna curriculum. And the Pollyanna curriculum, it's pretty widely known. It's a curriculum for, again, elementary and middle school students that focuses on intersectionality, implicit bias, white privilege, systemic racism, LGBTQ issues, and things like that. And what we found out from my reporting is that parents are saying that angst is coming from inside. It's coming from parents that might not necessarily want to hear about racial bias or white privilege. And that's why parents are telling me that they're so frustrated.
So did the head of school and the board decide not to go forward with this curriculum because some parents didn't want them to? Is that what you're saying?
That is what parents are telling me. And of course, that's a hard thing to verify when the school is declining to comment, the board of trustees is declining to comment. But yes, that is what parents are saying. That is coming from the inside, that angst, so to speak.
We reached out to Bowles last week when we first heard about this story, and a spokesperson told WJCT News, quote, "We are committed to continuing to move forward and finding the right initiatives for Bowles. You can view some of the things in discussion at Bowles.org under About Us." Okay, Dr. Tammy Hodo of All Things Diverse, as someone who goes in and consults with institutions and companies on these kinds of initiatives, what's your thought about what's happening at the Bowles School?
Well, it's very problematic. When you look at the demographics of the student body as well as the faculty at Bowles, it's not diverse at all. And one of their mottos is that all things are possible. And considering that we're in a global society, reality is these students do need to learn the correct and true history of the experience of marginalized groups in America. Too often the curriculum is, it's not perceived or it's not developed in a way that is very true and honest about the history of this country when it comes to race and ethnicity. And I think that a lot of parents are very fearful or that cognitive dissonance is alive regarding learning new things that kind of dispel all the racial myths that they've heard before. It's imperative for the students to learn the true history of this country surrounding race, the institutionalized components of racism and institutional racism that have impeded certain groups from developing, you know, to their full potential because of policies and practices. So it's rather disheartening to hear that they're going to pull this curriculum. I think that the parents that are not okay with this do not want to recognize that the experiences of people of color, the BIPOC, right, the Black Indigenous people of color, have had very different experiences in America. And we tend to want to glorify and make everything seem that it's been equitable, when reality is that's not the case. They may be concerned about having those conversations about white privilege, which is very much real. And they may not want to talk about meritocracy when it comes to that, because white privilege does allow certain avenues of that are advantageous to Caucasians that, you know, continue to be very detrimental to people of color.
Now, earlier this year, actually, I should say last summer, a new Instagram account got some attention called Black at Bowls. It included dozens of anonymous testimonials documenting trauma and abuse. There were some allegations against faculty members. In response, Bowls hired a consultant to review all this. They provided implicit bias training for faculty. They launched a diversity, equity, and inclusion task force. I'm quoting from your story, Emily. And they hosted speakers and consultants to discuss topics like diversity and race. Dr. Hodo, you know, when we talk about white privilege, schools like Bowles, let's be clear, they're emblematic of that. They've historically been almost all white. It's a private school. It's expensive to attend, although scholarship opportunities are available. And so when you look at the actions Bowles has taken to date to grapple with the racial justice movement, what about the things that they have done? Do you think those are sufficient, or do you think that more should be done?
I think that more definitely needs to be done. I think that a lot of people are uncomfortable having these conversations, but we need to get really comfortable having them. We have not had that racial reconciliation that we need to have. I commend Bowles for, you know, developing a committee and bringing in other speakers, and that's great, but there's so much more that needs to be done. Again, cognitive dissonance in America is real surrounding issues of race and ethnicity. People often say, why can't everyone pull themselves up by their bootstraps? But they fail to recognize the institutional racist policies that have been, you know, alive and well in our society and continue to function. So I think fragility is one of the issues that Bowles is having. Some of the parents do not want to recognize that, you know, we are having different experiences in America as people of color. And I think that just doesn't sit with that narrative that they've been told or that they want their children to believe. But it's in Bowles' best interest to continue to implement racial equity curriculum, because their students, if they're going to be the best of the best and go out and make positive changes in our world, they need to be culturally competent. And at this point, I'm not sure that they are.
Emily Block, you interviewed a number of students and parents. What were some of the perspectives you got about all of this from
Melissa.
The community?
So something we know, speaking to both Black and white families, I think it's important to emphasize, is that they all were frustrated. Every family I spoke to, regardless of their race, thought that this was a curriculum that needed to be integrated into the school. They were voicing frustrations that, why did it get rolled out? Why did it get announced through a newsletter that's since been deleted? why did it get vetted through the diversity committee just to be taken off the table? So there was mutual frustration from the families I spoke to, and particularly with parents and families of color. We're hearing that their students have gone through the school years of their lives without having one Black faculty member to teach them, one Black faculty member that looked like them. So we're hearing that from the families, that they could count on one hand the amount of Black and members of color faculty members that they saw throughout their years at the school. And of course, that was something we were unable to independently verify through the school itself because they declined to give us their diversity statistics and demographic numbers.
Emily, this is a private school. Have these kinds of curriculums been rolled out around the country in public schools? What's the track record there?
So Pollyanna, though I've seen it in some public schools, not in Florida, Duval Schools doesn't teach it, for instance, but they are working on, public schools are working on figuring out ways to integrate more diversity conversations and implicit and biased conversations into the curriculum. A good example I can give of that is Douglas Anderson School of the Arts is very much a public school, even though it is a magnet school, of course. When they also faced, you know, pushback this summer, as did Bowles, as did Episcopal, as did Stanton, for those Black at Instagram accounts, they countered with saying, well, we're going to integrate more Black history classes into our school. So they're doing a Black history class as well as a Black history, Black theater history class, a Black dance class, and things of that nature. So we are seeing rollout in different ways across the county and across the country, even if it's not necessarily Pollyanna.
Let's go to your calls. It's Black History Month. What are your thoughts about the flap at Bowles over a diversity curriculum? 549-2937. Give us a call. Eric in Arlington. Hey, Eric, go ahead. You're on the radio.
Yes. I got a comment and a question. The comment first. This just seems like an extension of what went on in the Capitol on the 6th, where you had people that refused to accept reality and wanted to live in some sort of alternative reality. This program seems to want to present the facts of the reality of the history of the country. And here we are again with white, rich, entitled people trying to do everything they can to deny that reality. I guess Marjorie Taylor Greene, the representative from Georgia, this is a person that's really popular with the people at Bowles, and also, you know, the people that invaded the Capitol believe that there were laser beams from outer space, that Jews were shooting laser beams from outer space.
Well, that's something that Congresswoman Greene said, not necessarily believed by all of her fans. But go ahead, Eric.
Okay, well, to me, it's just an extension of not wanting to believe, just wanting to live in this alternative reality. And since they're white and wealthy, I guess they're allowed to. But my question is, the word Pollyanna, it kind of has in some ways, a derogatory word that's sort of meant to describe a person or an idea or sentiment that is meant to put a happy face on stuff.
Yeah.
The word poly, it doesn't really seem like the right description. Where did the word come from?
I don't know the answer to that, but you make a good point, Eric. Dr. Hodo. Emily, you go ahead then, Dr. Hodo.
My understanding from the school, directly on the Pollyanna point, my understanding from the program, which is a New York nonprofit that goes by the same name, is it is to counter that. So Pollyanna is supposed to imply this like rose-colored glasses, everything is great, I don't see color sort of, you know,
it's
idea.
To puncture that and idea, is it? Okay.
Exactly.
I see.
That's my understanding.
Okay. All right, Dr. Hodo, what are your thoughts about Eric's point that we do have a problem in this country with large numbers of Americans living in an alternate reality, whether it comes to the results of the presidential election, whether it comes to accepting the reality that we do have a problem with systemic racism in America? This is your life's work. This is what you do, trying to enlighten people about these issues. So discuss this with me.
Well, I totally agree with Eric. I think too often people don't want to face the reality. In America, we're very individualistic, and we talk a lot about meritocracy. And when we talk about meritocracy, white privilege doesn't bode well with that. People don't want to recognize that white privilege is real, and due to the complexion of their skin, you know, regardless of their socioeconomic status, there are positive attributes that are attached to them. As a person of color, when I walk in certain spaces, there are negative assumptions that are associated with my beautiful brown complexion. And it doesn't matter about social class. It tends to be, you know, obviously more favorable towards Caucasians. When Emily talked about, I do want to say something about DA, though. So DA, Douglas Anderson, their principal, Melanie Hammer, is amazing. She reached out to me right away when Black at DA came about. I went in, I did training on implicit bias, microaggressions. We came up with a strategic diversity plan. I worked with one of their alum, Ulysses Owens, who created this DA guest artist list. So we see all these African-American artists and other people in BIPOC who are coming into DA and doing these programs and educating and enlightening the students, and that look like the students of color. You know, so I just want to commend DA because they were very adamant about that, and it was their principal. Ms. Hammer was going to make this happen because she was not okay with what she saw. And I mean, and when I interacted with her, it was very sincere. It was very real and very raw.
Have you reached out? So have you spoken with the Bowles School, Dr. Hodo?
I have reached out to Bowles 3 times. So I actually have the proposal I had put together for them quite some time ago up on my screen right now. So I was very surprised when they reached out to a company, as per my understanding, an individual in New York, a Caucasian male from what I was able to research on my own, to come in and do the investigation. Because I think you need to be a part of this community to understand the racial climate. Recognizing that we have 3, you know, Confederate monuments, 8, you know, Confederate markers. You have to be a part of the community, I believe, in order to understand the racial climate and the demographics. But they opted to go with what I can see is a white male from New York to come in and do the investigation, which I find rather interesting as a diversity person.
Robert emails the show, we've heard a lot of speculation and conjecture about why the program was continued, but no firsthand testimony. Stop speculating. Perhaps the administration knows what they're doing. You know what, Robert? We did ask Bowles for comment. They did not give us a full explanation. We are confident in Emily Block's reporting from the Florida Times Union, as she has spoken with a number of parents and students and faculty. We're just relaying what's already been reported in the TU. So I hope that answers your question. Here's another email from a listener. My 3 nieces and 1 nephew have all recently gone to Bowles, and I have attended many productions and events. I'm always dismayed at the lack of diversity. Invariably, there are only a handful of kids of color. Bowles is about money and football, a perfect example of elitism and white flight, he says. Here's a tweet from a listener. How does this compare to other private schools? A school like Episcopal, I've heard, has a similar program. Emily, is that true?
That's a great question. So we know that there are similar issues across any school, but especially, you know, elite institutions where that just lack diversity as a whole. So over the summer, which again, this was this school year, over the summer, right before the school year started, when the Black at Instagram accounts began popping up, a number of them were Jacksonville schools, including Episcopal, including, I believe, Paxton, Stanton, Bowles, and one other that is escaping me right now, or Bishop Kenny. So we know that this is not a problem exclusive to Bowles, that we know that diversity issues are happening all across the country, especially now as this is in the forefront of our conversations and political climate. The issue at hand is that the school put out a letter signed by a headmaster, signed by the Board of Trustees, neither of who were willing to comment, saying that a program about that diversity, about implicit bias, was removed because of angst. And that's their word, not mine. Mm. And that's why the parents are so upset.
Tracy in Arlington. Hi, Tracy. You're a former Bowles parent, is that right?
Hi, Melissa. Yeah, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your guests addressing this topic. Yes, I've had three sons attend Bowles over the course of about 13 years, so I'm very familiar with the community. I've been part of the Bowles family forever. And while there are great things about Bowles, I think their approach to this particular topic is a bit disingenuous, initially showing concern, but then summarily dismissing many of the comments and concerns from the, for example, the Black at Bowles Instagram account. I'm a African-American male, and my kids are obviously African-American, and we were interviewed and by the company that was brought in to address these concerns. And, you know, Bowles is playing lip service to the issue, but not really doing anything about it. And it's been this way for well over a decade, at least, as long as I've been a part of the community.
What do you think they should do, Tracy?
I think they should put their money where their mouth is when they address or initially voice concerns about the issue. I think a program needs to be implemented, and even if it's run by an outside company or the organization out of New York, but something needs to happen because there is a huge problem at Bowles. You're right. I can count literally on one hand, using one finger, the number of African-Americans or BIPOC teachers that my kids have had from kindergarten through graduation. It's horrible, actually. And you know, for a school with the resources that Bowles has, it's inexcusable.
All right, Tracy, thanks for the call. Susan in Mandarin. Hey, Susan, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to ask your guest, what do they think about requirements that any school that receives voucher money should have a diverse population, and any charter school or magnet school should also have a diverse population? Because it seems like we're segregating. We're maybe not de jure segregation, but a de facto segregation. And we need to mingle together to know one another. And also, I wanted to ask about a couple of different bills that are before our state legislature right now. One of them is SB 582, which lets parents exempt their children from required classes. And right now, in the public schools, it is required to teach African American studies, and it's also required to teach the Holocaust. But charter schools aren't required to teach those classes, and neither are private schools that receive voucher money. So it seems like we should require the same diversity training of all publicly funded schools. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Susan. Okay, Dr. Hodo, let's be clear. Bowles is a private institution. People pay tuition to attend, and they pay quite a bit. And so Bowles isn't typically subject to the same oversight or regulations or academic requirements that the caller made reference to. But parents do choose an institution like Bowles because of its academic excellence. So in your perspective, how should a private institution that has a lot more freedom in who it hires, the curriculum it puts together, how should it respond to this movement that is sweeping the country while at the same time exercising the independence that comes with being a private institution?
Well, I think that Bowles should actually just do the right thing. You know, my son is a graduate of Episcopal. He was one of the 2020 graduates. And I will say one thing that I saw that was different in regards to this Instagram was that when you looked at Bowles when you looked at Episcopal and DA and Bishop Kenny, the microaggression and biases that the students seemed to share were predominantly from other students. One thing that stuck out to me with Bowles was it was the faculty and staff that were making some of these comments. I think reality is if you want your students to be competitive, they need this education because we are in a global economy. I'm a PhD from the University of Wisconsin. We had Fortune 500 companies stop recruiting at our university because they talked about the lack of diversity and the students not being able to connect in a global market because they were not culturally competent and had not been exposed to the concepts and ideals and the reality of different groups. So, you know, while Bowles is private, just like my son went to Episcopal, you know, they worked at Episcopal. I was able to work with some of the counselors, and they worked with the students, and they were cognizant, and they also read books and things that were appropriate and understanding about different cultures, and that was just part of their curriculum.
Diana in Riverside. Hi, Diana. Go ahead.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to say I'm a Bowles parent, and I just wanted to comment that as of right now, the Bowles school has said that they're not planning to release any of the conclusions or recommendations from the report from the independent investigator, which Dr. Hodo mentioned. That investigation has been concluded for well over a month now, and they have said that they cannot release anything from that report due to privacy concerns. And I think that, I just wanted to say, I think it would go a long way towards demonstrating transparency and accountability if they were to release at least the findings, conclusions, and recommendations from that report.
Have you made that opinion known to the school as a parent who's paying tuition?
Yes, many of us have.
What was the response?
They said they can't release anything from the report due to privacy concerns.
So what else are the parents saying about all this when they talk?
There's been a lot of, talk about just wanting more communication in general. We have, many of us have raised the idea of wanting to hear what the concerns are from the parents who did not want the curriculum. But there hasn't been yet any open forums, town halls, or open discussions bringing everyone to the table.
Do you think they ought to host an open forum event, a town hall, maybe a Zoom hall if people can't congregate? Do you think that would be helpful, Diana?
Yes, and we've asked for that. I have asked for it in letters to the administration and, other parents on our diversity parent committee have asked for that, and we haven't gotten that yet.
Okay. Thanks for that, Emily. Is that something that you've heard as well, that perhaps the school could get everyone together in a discussion in a town hall forum?
Yes, absolutely. Parents have been asking for that. The parents I've spoken to have been asking for town halls, but are getting the same response that caller is telling us about. And they have been asking to see that completed report, the report that Dr. Hodo was referring to earlier that was completed by an outside party who lives in New York, who's not part of this community, which is a concern parents have raised to me. And when I asked the school about that report and asked if it was complete and what the status of it was and if we could see it, their spokesperson told me that it's complete, but the same thing, that they won't release it because of confidential issues, privacy concerns, and that they included suggestions from the report in their letter to parents last week. But I reviewed that letter, and the suggestions were really vague. They said, and I'm quoting, explore ways to further diversify the Bowles community. And here's another quote, keep the community updated on our progress in an open and transparent way. But they never elaborated on how that's going to be implemented or how those things
okay.
are going to happen.
And almost out of time, let me get in two more quick comments. On our Facebook, here's a comment. Building equity in any institution, especially a school, has to go beyond teaching Black content only through guest speakers and artists. Let's go to LaTanya in Jacksonville. LaTanya, hi. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. Hi, Dr. Hodo. Hi, Emily. I am also a current parent. I'm actually in the article myself, so I wanted to just thank you all for bringing this to everyone's attention, because a lot of people do think that because particularly Black and minority or people of color students go to Bowles, that we aren't going through the same trials and tribulations that people who look like us from a public perspective. So now I don't mind. I know we only can say last names, but I think everyone knows who I am and who my daughter is and everything that we've been going through at Bowles, and I just wanted to come on and just thank you all.
Thank you. Yes, your daughter Taylor, yes, is such a bright star. She's so talented.
Well, she's surviving Bose. I don't know if she's thriving, but she is surviving. She has one more year left, and I know as a parent, I do what I do for my kid and those who look like her and even those who don't and those who are marginalized and oppressed. I do it because it's what is needed to be done. I hope that this platform that Melissa is giving people to call in and having Dr. Hodo and Tammy for raising these issues up, I hope more people here in Jacksonville, I actually challenge those who donate, those who feel that, I heard a caller say, oh, you know, Bose is a good school. Academically, I feel yes, my child is getting one of the best educations that she probably may not have gotten elsewhere. However, the price for that has cost us dearly, and I wouldn't wish that on any person, whether they were black or white. And so what I do hope is that Bose is listening today. I hope they do more action than lip service, and I hope that people like you, Melissa, and Dr. Hodo, and Emily, and our community leaders, and all these people who want to support Bose financially and any other means, that they definitely help us, the ones that are continually there, and those who are fighting this fight, join us so that we can be on the right side of history for a change. And thank you so much.
Thank you, LaTanya. A couple of more comments on Facebook. Kathy writes, I'm sure I'm not the only person curious about what created angst at Bowles. Change is uncomfortable. If we aren't teaching our kids that, we aren't teaching them anything. Were the students experiencing angst? Good. Maybe then they can empathize with the BIPOC around them. And that's an acronym for people of color. Okay, Dr. Hodo, I'd like to give you the last word. Where do you think Bowles should go from here?
Well, I think Bowles needs to really do some reflection and recognize that you know, when I look at the demographics, they have a very low population of BIPOC students as well as faculty and staff, and they need to do some consideration in regards to where they're recruiting from. They need to recognize that the faculty and staff set the tone for the climate and culture, and that it's not okay that some of their students are up there and they're made to feel uncomfortable and as if they're not part of the school. And that's problematic. And that should be so much of a problem that they would want to correct that.
Thank you both so much for being with us. Dr. Tammy Hodo, CEO of All Things Diverse, Emily Block of the Florida Times Union. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
All right, a quick break. But later in the hour, we're going to tell you how you can get your hands on some Girl Scout cookies this month and how you can even do it through the Grubhub app. Yeah, that's later. But up next.
When the store cut hours at the beginning of the pandemic, my wife is a part-time employee, so she wasn't getting as many hours.
What is a corporate giant's responsibility to cover its frontline employees with health insurance in a pandemic? We speak with a local Publix associate next.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. We'll have the latest on the response to the fast-spreading COVID-19 variants here in the United States and how countries around the world are coping with the pandemic and handling vaccine distribution. Those stories and the latest news next time on Here and Now.
Tomorrow at 1, here on WJCT News 89.9.
It's been about a month since the last relief bill passed, but the benefits?
I've still been claiming every week. I just haven't received anything.
I'm Kai Rizdal. The benefits lapse, and what it means for people relying on that money. We will have the rest of the day's business news, of course, and the numbers from Wall Street next time on Marketplace.
tomorrow night at 6 here on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Publix is in the news on a number of fronts lately. Of course, Publix is prominently the location for COVID vaccination sites around the state. Appointments are hard to get. And the move has been criticized since Publix stores are not commonly located in underserved communities. Now there's more. Publix heiress Julie Jenkins Fancelli of Lakeland, we've learned from the Wall Street Journal, was the primary donor funding the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. Publix sent WJCT News a statement about this, distancing the grocery giant from the Capitol siege, calling it deplorable. And a spokeswoman told us Ms. Fancelli is not an employee at Publix and she is not involved with any company business. But amidst all of that, at the same time, people who are employed at Publix have been reaching out to us about other issues. We recently spoke with an associate who's been working at a Jacksonville Publix for over a decade now. His wife works at Publix, too. But this associate, who we are identifying only by his first name, Mark, says his household has suffered in the pandemic, even though both husband and wife are employed. Now, here's why. In the early months of the crisis, Publix cut hours for part-time associates. And that ended up costing Mark and his wife thousands of dollars in added health insurance costs. Mark's plea to Publix is simple. Since he and his wife are both frontline workers and they're at risk of contracting COVID, he thinks Publix should cover not only his wife, but also other part-time workers who are at risk in this pandemic as they go to their shifts every day. I spoke with him. Take a listen. Hi, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So you're a Publix associate. You've been with the company for a decade. Your wife is also a Publix employee. Once the pandemic got underway, tell us what happened in terms of your health benefits.
Well, initially nothing changed, but when the store cut hours at the beginning of the pandemic and was open shorter period, my wife is a part-time employee, so she wasn't getting as many hours. And to qualify for health benefits, you have to reach 1,500 hours during the calendar year. So she wound up being short of that by about 94 hours. And so she lost her benefits the first of the year, and we had to move her to my plan.
And what did that mean for your budget, your monthly budget?
Basically, that's costing me about $100 a week.
To cover her additional. Under your plan. Okay.
Right, because for the individual associate, it's a very affordable plan. But when you go to an associate plus spouse, it's a little expensive.
So you went to Publix management about this, correct?
Yes, I did. Actually, I started addressing this well before Thanksgiving. I brought it up saying, you know, this is the situation. What is Publix going to do to address it? And I was getting told by store-level management, yeah, we're working on it. And my wife was being told the same at her store. We're working on it. We're sure Publix is going to do the right thing. So, and it sort of came as a surprise when I didn't step up on January 1st and say, you know, we're going to grandfather in everybody that qualified for benefits in 2019 or, you know, something along those lines.
So the issue you and your wife have with Publix is that it's one of Florida's largest companies, and it's dropping employee health care programs or benefits in the middle of a pandemic. That's at the heart of it, right?
That's kind of the heart of it. But like I said, basically what I really feel is they should have grandfathered in, because there's a lot of part-time employees at Publix. And there's a lot of employees whose hours were affected negatively during those first months of the pandemic. My wife's average hours went from around 28 to 30 to 1 week she only had 16 hours. A couple of weeks she only had, 18. And, 2 months of that, that's what put her under, the required hours.
And to be fair to the company, they were reacting to the measures that were being imposed at the time. But what you're saying now is that you'd like them to make your family whole. Is that right?
Oh, not just mine. Like I said, I know a number of part-timers that have been affected by this. And it's not like I'm trying to say anything negative about the company. I just think in a situation like this, they should have looked at it and realized this is a problem and said, you know, we're going to go back instead of, even if they just went down to 1,000 hours for the part-time employees to qualify for benefits, that would eliminate the problem.
I think part of the reason why this is such a salient issue, too, is that you and your wife and so many other people who work in grocery stores are frontline workers in this crisis, and you're exposing yourself to COVID-19 as well, even though now we have a mask mandate, at least in Jacksonville. In the early months of the pandemic in particular, grocery store workers were particularly vulnerable.
Yes, and in fact, at the very beginning, Publix had a no-mask policy because they didn't want to frighten customers.
Right.
In fact, that held true for almost the entire first month before the CDC finally said, yeah, you probably should wear a mask.
So now that everybody is just in this mode of just trying to ride out the remaining months of this pandemic until more people can be vaccinated, what's it like? What's a typical shift like at a Publix store, given that, you know, it's going to the grocery store is something just about everybody's still doing and have been doing throughout this whole ordeal?
Honestly, it has been so busy because so many restaurants are closed or limited service. I mean, I know our profits have really gone up substantially, and we're very, very busy. I mean, it's almost like every day is Saturday now.
Wow.
And in terms of how busy we are.
So given that you're busy and profits are up, I think, does that bolster your case that workers should have their insurance covered, given that the company's doing great?
Yeah, in my opinion, I think, you know, you're a company that is primarily employing frontline workers, pharmacy technicians, people that are face-to-face with you, providing service, making subs at the deli counter, giving you your seafood, giving you your meat, all of these face-to-face interactions every day, you know, and we're willing to take that risk and step up because that's, I mean, what Publix is. We're a part of the community. We understand that. But I kind of feel like, especially for our part-time associates, me being full-time, it didn't affect me. But for all the part-timers out there, not just my wife, wouldn't it be just the right thing to do to come up with a solution to this problem? You know, grandfathering the people from 2019, reduce the hours needed to qualify, and just on a temporary basis until things go back to normal.
And that was Publix associate Mark. We did reach out to Publix. Here's their statement in part. We offer full and part-time associates comprehensive coverage with low deductibles. Our part-time associates can participate in the health plan if they work 1,500 hours per year. We did decide to give work credit hours toward eligibility for health insurance for some associates who did lose hours. And we will continue to follow this story. In a moment, how you can get your hands on some Girl Scout cookies safely. We'll be right back.
Congaree & Penn Landscape Trees, Jacksonville's family-owned large tree installation, relocation, and comprehensive landscape installer. More info and appointments available at congareetrees.com or 527-1945.
Wingard, a Jacksonville-based marketing and communications agency that advises businesses and nonprofits on their advertising budgets, campaigns, and messaging. More information on Wingard's advertising services can be found at wearewingard.com.
The annual Battle of Alusti reenactment will not be held for the first time in 45 years due to COVID-19. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll look at why this Civil War battle was so significant. We'll discuss a series of special issues of the Florida Historical Quarterly and Fort Jefferson. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Marco Werman. The World's Newsroom brings you the big picture stories and some other stuff.
It may surprise you to learn, but in Italy, many, many mafiosi are religious.
You don't expect to find a swimming pool in the middle of the desert.
The rule number one when planning a golf course in China is to not call it a golf course.
Join us and hear the world.
Today at 3 on WJCT News 89.9.
America's unemployment crisis is now Joe Biden's problem, but the numbers alone don't tell the full story. Many who are working can't find a full-time job with a living wage. We'll take a closer look, plus what's next for Reddit's revolutionaries as they try to hold Wall Street's feet to the fire, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Here is some good news. It's Girl Scout cookie season. Now, of course, this year things will be a little bit different due to the pandemic, but it will still be easy for you to get your hands on those Thin Mints, those Samoas, and all the other treats that you love. Marianne Jacobs is CEO of Girl Scouts of Gateway Council. Hey, Marianne, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me this morning.
You know, it's so funny because just the other day, my daughters were asking about the Girl Scout cookies. When will they start selling them? My kids used to sell them when they were younger, of course. And you've come up with some creative and socially distant and contact-free ways for us to get our Girl Scout cookies. How can we do that?
We did, and we're so excited about the opportunities, not just for our customers, but for our girls. So this year, we have a couple different avenues. We are actually encouraging drive-through booths. We are hanging doors so that our customers can go directly to our website, pick their favorite troop, and have their cookies delivered with contactless delivery. We're accepting contactless payments this year. But the big news for us, I firmly believe, is our national partnership with Grubhub. And that begins today.
Wow.
So individuals, yeah, will be able to go on the Grubhub app or on the Grubhub website, order their favorite Girl Scout cookies and have them delivered.
Well, hey, we've all gotten very adept at doing that in this pandemic. So this should be easy for people to do. They just need to tap the app and search Girl Scout cookies and they're off and running. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Now, as I'm looking at the website, GirlScoutCookies.org, you can buy cookies through the website by entering your zip code. This couldn't be easier. And Marianne, there have been some new cookies introduced in recent years. Tell me, I'm curious, what are the most popular cookies and what can people pick from this year?
Our Lemon Ups were introduced last year, and they are a great lemon cookie. But, Melissa, I have to tell you, Thin Mints continues to control the market.
The reigning champion!
as do the other chocolate cookies. It must be the chocolate component. We see Thin Mints come over and above every other order in years past, and I believe that will probably be the same for this year as well. It's the good old traditional Girl Scout cookie.
I am a ride or die Thin Mint fan. It's not as though I eat an entire sleeve of frozen Thin Mints every spring or anything. No, I would never do such a thing. Yes, I actually
well,
would.
Well, if you did,
yes,
you
I
would
actually
join
do.
Many, many people, including myself.
Oh yeah, you've got to keep them in the freezer. Now that is very important. And Marianne, let's explain too why this is one of the most fantastic child and development programs going, because the girls learn money management, they learn people skills, they learn logistics. This whole program develops them in so many ways.
And when I think about particularly Jacksonville and Duval County and the logistics companies that are here, we are preparing these girls for positions in leadership as they continue to grow through high school and Girl Scouts and then, of course, and their future careers. I think that for what individuals don't see behind the scenes is more important than buying the cookie. And it is those decision-making, goal-setting, people skills. And this year, girls are even diving further into e-commerce and inventory control with the Grubhub partnership. The girls will actually fill the inventory or fill the request from the Grubhub app, and the Grubhub driver will come by with locations across 35 counties mm-hmm. for cookies to be delivered. So it's a whole new learning component, which is thrilling for the girls and exciting for those of us who know they will become the future leaders of our community.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So again, beginning today, you can access your Girl Scout cookies through the Grubhub app. You can go to girlscoutcookies.org, enter your zip code, have them delivered. You can text cookies to 59618. And when you order your cookies, you can also arrange to have some donated to Soldiers Angels, first responders, providing comfort to military veterans and their families. So check it out online. Mm-hmm. Get your cookies now. Marianne Jacobs, CEO of Girl Scouts of Gateway Council. So exciting. It is that time of year again. Marianne, thanks so much and have fun with it.
Thank you, Melissa. We will. Enjoy your day.
Again, I'm going to repeat those one more time. GirlScoutCookies.org and enter your zip code. Download the Grubhub app. Order your Girl Scout cookies through the app. Or you can text cookies to this short code. It's 59618. Check it out. I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks for listening to First Coast Connect. Yeah, my mom was the Girl Scout troop leader when I was a kid, so I'm ride or die with this organization. Thanks so much to producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, news director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. We value your feedback. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And you can catch our podcast later today wherever you listen, or you can always listen to all of our programming through the WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.